Hi, hello, and welcome to today's podcast on serverless computing and pitfalls. This is a two-segment podcast, and this happens to be the concluding segment. For those who have not heard the part one, no worries. You can refer to the description section. I will leave the link over there. For those who are continuing from part one, let me just give you a quick recap. So in our earlier part, we did see a couple of scenarios. Scenario one, how a very simple configuration mistake got quickly escalated and had a huge cost impact. This configuration mistake could have even happened in a traditional server-based model. However, in such scenarios, the server would have maxed out rather than impacting your cost. So the lessons learned from this particular context is, set your alarms and notifications in order and double up your efforts on monitoring any serverless deployments for things which can potentially go wrong, right? So that is part number one. And in part two, we did see when people migrated from a server-based model to a serverless model, it not resulted in cost and performance savings always. So the word always is very important there. So we did see a scenario where a small business based out of Belgium, they had a AWS application which was running well with EC2, Elastic Balancer, a cloud distribution network, and then they wanted to migrate it into a serverless model using Lambda and API. They did a small migration, and when they were comparing the results in the test environment, they were very surprised to see that the performance, there was a dip by a factor of 15 times it was lower. And the cost was escalating above 8 times than the earlier architecture. So the conclusion which we came from that particular scenario was, it's not that serverless is always cost effective, or it is not that always serverless will give you a higher performance. There are scenarios wherein if you can't anticipate or forecast the incoming load and there might be spikes, serverless really helps you because it averages out. When there are no spikes, it scales down, thereby saving you a good amount of money. But in a case where you have a very consistent heavy load hitting you, hitting your application, in such a scenario, your traditional server-based model is as good as your serverless model, and in certain cases they are more superior. I mean the server-based models. So those are the two learning points which we had. By no means we are trying to discredit the serverless model, but what we are trying to drive home is we need to be aware when to choose serverless and when not to choose serverless. Since there's a lot of hype surrounding around serverless, we all tend to believe that we have to go into serverless. It is being advocated as a one-point solution for all our design challenges. This podcast tries to approach that particular hype in a very systematic and a scientific way by bringing out the facts, saying that it's not the case. You need to analyze your use case and then make an informed decision of whether to go to serverless or not. That's the whole point behind this two series podcast. So having said that, we will continue with two more live scenarios in today's podcast. One is called as queue of death and the other one is called as a $1 million problem. In both the scenarios, there were organizations which went into a serverless mode without being aware of the nuances. So in your testing terminology, this is called as a boundary condition. An application which functions or behaves in a certain way during the normal scenario, when it is hitting the boundaries, when it is very closer to the wall, the behavior changes. So we need to analyze and factor in those extreme conditions. If we don't, we get into an unpredictable outcome. That is what exactly happened in both the scenarios. So let us deep dive into each of them. So the very first scenario which we are going to see is a problem called as queue of death. So here is a startup which was setting up its application in AWS, and obviously Lambda or the serverless was their primary choice. So their application was written in a very, very simple way. You have your incoming request, which was routed into a simple queuing service, or abbreviated as SQS, one of the very earlier service of AWS. And as soon as a message appears in an SQS, it will be picked up by Lambda, it will process it. If you just look at this architecture at a very high level, this is a very simple architecture, or rather I will say it's a textbook example of a Lambda and a SQS interaction. So things were going fine. They had a queue called as a dead letter queue, wherein messages which were invalid or which couldn't get processed by the application due to some errors or because it was getting timed out, they were routed into the dead letter queue. Traditionally, their expectation was this dead letter queue will contain probably say less than 5% of the incoming messages, which was an acceptable threshold to that particular organization. All of a sudden, when the business was growing up, they did see this dead letter queue was expanding, and they got curious and concerned. Curious because they were not expecting these numbers to spike up so much. Concerned because what really it means is, if there are some valid orders which are coming in from the customers or getting landed into a dead queue, that means that you are losing revenue, you are losing goodwill of the customer, as well as the potential resale. So they went into it and they took out all those messages, and they wanted to verify why this particular messages landed up there. On analysis, they figured out those messages were not invalid. They shouldn't have gone there first of all. So the other choice was there an application error or was there a timeout? So the way to figure that out is to go back to the CloudWatch metrics and analyze them. To their surprise, they figured out that it was neither a timeout issue, neither there was an application error. So what was actually happening? Why did these messages land there? Now, to understand this, you need to go one level below your basic understanding of Lambda and SQS. And you need to know the engineering nuances of it. So let's deep dive into it. So when a message appears in an SQS queue, the way it works is, SQS queue will have this message and will wait for a Lambda to pick it up. The moment a Lambda picks it up, it will make the message invisible so that some other Lambda doesn't pick up the same message and repeats the processing. How long will it keep the message invisible is defined by a parameter called as visibility timeout parameter. Say for example, I know that a normal processing may take 4 seconds. So I'm just giving you an example. I will set the visibility timeout as 5 seconds. So within that 5 seconds, the Lambda will process the message and it will trigger a service to delete that message in the queue. It's a happy path scenario. What happens if that either the message is not processed within that 5 seconds? That means that the queue will understand something has gone wrong and it will make the message visible again, giving an opportunity for some other Lambda to pick it up. So how many times will this continue? Can that message keep appearing and appearing again and again in the queue? No. So what AWS does there is, it sets up a parameter called as a maximum receive count, which basically says how many times a message can reappear in a queue. It is a parameter which you can set the limit using the GUI or through your CLI, whichever way you want it. Once the number of reappearance exceeds that threshold defined by the maximum count, then that message will not reappear again in the queue, but it will be routed to the dead queue, saying that there is something wrong with this. We gave it n number of chances to be processed, but each time it never got processed completely, it came back. That's what it means. And then there's a third parameter called as a reserved concurrency limit, which is applicable to Lambda. Though Lambda can scale on its own, we will set up a limit saying that don't go beyond this threshold. And if there are requests beyond this, start throttling it. So that's what it means. Why we do that? Because we want to avoid exponentially growing up bills. So if we assume that at any point in time we will be having 1,000 or 2,000 requests coming in, probably you can set up your concurrency limit to 2,500, 2,500, so that beyond that Lambda will not auto scale. You will not be incurring a huge bill, unpredictable bill, but you know that there is a cap which is set on it. Beyond that limit, it will throttle and it will start processing once the throttling limit is either increased or the incoming messages has reduced, right? So we have seen three parameters. One is a visibility timeout, the time until which a message remains invisible, beyond which it reappears in the queue or it is being made visible in the queue. The other one is a maximum receive count, that is the maximum number of times a message can reappear in a queue, after which it is rerouted to the dead queue. The third parameter which we just saw is the reserved concurrency limit, which says what is the limit up to which a Lambda can auto scale, beyond which it will start throttling. Now, what was happening in the architecture which we just discussed is, during the boundary condition, when the Lambda was throttling, if you had a burst of messages which were incoming through the SQS, the message was picked up by a Lambda, but it couldn't process it because it has reached this concurrency limit. So it will put it back in the queue, and then the SQS will pick it up. It will see that, okay, it has come back unprocessed. It will again send it to the Lambda. Again, the Lambda will say that, hey, you know what? I am in the throttling stage. I cannot process you now. I will put you back in the queue. Then again, it will go on in a loop until the max receive count is reached. Say, for example, if you have set up a max receive count as 10, that means that 10 times the message can reappear in the queue. The 11th time, SQS will direct it to the dead queue rather than sending it to the Lambda. But what actually has happened here is, it was not a real timeout wherein the message was not getting processed, neither it was an invalid message leading to an application error or an exception. But here the scenario was, the throttling was going on, the Lambda couldn't process a message, and for each attempt the message, the count of reappearance was increasing. And the moment it hit a limit, then SQS decided, saying that there was something wrong with this message. Maybe it was a junk message, invalid message, or too big a message, which cannot be processed during the ideal scenario. And it started rerouting to the dead letter queue. So this scenario happened when the Lambda was undergoing a throttling phase and you have a burst of incoming messages. And both this boundary condition was occurring, the result was unpredictable or an unexpected outcome. So in such cases, do we have a right solution? I'm afraid it is not. There are three parameters which we just spoke about: the visibility timeout, the throttling limit, and the receive count max. Probably we need to balance it off so that by the time the throttling limit or the Lambda was able to process the other messages and it could come under the throttling limit and pick this burst of messages, this particular situation will reoccur. So that means that either you increase your visibility timeout or increase your throttling limit or you increase your maximum receive count. Each of this decision will have its ramification. So if you are going to increase the max receive count, that means that the number of times a message will reappear in a queue is going to increase. The visibility timeout increase, that means that for some reason that message was not getting processed, the time taken for a other compute service to pick it up is going to increase, because until the visibility timeout is reached, this message will not be visible to any other compute instance. So fundamentally, it's not a one-way decision. It is something which we need to understand your particular application and we need to handle it. So I don't say that we have a very concrete solution for this problem. It can happen even in your scenario, in your applications. But what I'm trying to tell you is this: there is a boundary condition here. When there is a throttling phase of your Lambda and your burst of messages which is incoming, and that means that expect some unexpected results. And the reason why it is happening, we just explained, because Lambda will not process it. It will keep resurfacing in the queue, but each time the count will keep increasing, and once it reaches the threshold of the maximum number of reappearances, it will be routed to the dead queue. So one more interesting problem with serverless. So now let's get into the $1 million problem. This is all about a startup which creates application in AWS. Great thing. And they followed the serverless model. They had DynamoDB as their database. Things were going smoothly. The pricing plan for the DynamoDB was throughput based. So what does it mean by throughput based is, there are different pricing plans for DynamoDB. One, you pay as you go, and it depends on the number of reads and writes. So per set of reads, you will have a price, and per set of writes, you will have a price. But in this case, it will become unpredictable, and everyone loves certainty and predictability. So you can go for a throughput-based pricing, wherein you say that, hey, this is the capacity to which I commit. Anything beyond that, over and above, you can start throttling. So it brings in a set of predictability for the business users. And then they went on to this model. Things were going well. Slowly, the application was slowing down. And when the architects started looking into the application, they figured out the slowness was caused by the DynamoDB. It was becoming the weakest chain the weakest link in the whole chain. So what they did is they went ahead and increased that capacity provisioning. So what does it mean is your monthly bill is going to go up. They were fine with it, but they didn't see a proportionate increase in terms of performance. Either the performance was at the same point, or in certain cases or certain months, it was even dropping down. So here we have a problem that you have increased the provisions, you have increased the number of servers. I know it is a serverless world, but typically for your understanding, I'm saying that they have given the permission to provision more and more, but they don't see an increase in performance. Rather, the performance is still going down, whereas the bill has kept increasing over a period of months. So they don't know what to do. So the architects and the designers came together to investigate this problem. So when they were trying to analyze and dig out the documents to know how exactly this DynamoDB was functioning, the way they figured out is, so if you have an object, you want to write it into a DynamoDB, it will go through a hash function, which will determine a partition in which this particular object will go and sit. So you should have a more number of keys so that not very many objects will go and clutter around the same partition, making it as a very hot server. So most of your reads and writes will come only from that partition. Rather than that, objects should be uniformly distributed. So if I have 5 objects and I assume I have 5 partition, I'm making it absolutely simple. The hash function should be able to map each object to each other partition so that the load is distributed. Secondly, when the same object comes again for some updates or so certain reads, it should be mapping back to the same partition in which it was stored so that it is still fast enough. So this is how it functions. Perfect. Now, when they were trying to see, understand, with so many partitions being available, they don't expect any particular single partition to be overcrowded. But when they were taking the help of AWS teams to troubleshoot this technical issue, and they got a heat map of how the partitions are being loaded and how many reads and writes are happening, they were very surprised to see one single particular partition was showing in red, which means it is being heavily used, whereas the rest of the partitions were actually in blue, which means that their load was pretty standard, or it was even less than expected. So fundamentally, even though they were expanding a lot of partition, it looks like only one partition was actually causing the whole problem. Now they wanted to deep dive and figure out why exactly this particular partition. Serverless being a new concept, the number of the logs and the depth of the logs which is available is limited in nature. So they couldn't go beyond the heat map. Even to get the heat map, they had to engage AWS tech support to generate it. So they understood this particular partition is the overall problem. And it's not that they don't have sufficient partition with them, but something is unusually going on with this particular partition. So they went ahead with our traditional troubleshooting method of logging in the object whenever a throttling was happening. So whenever a throttling scenario was encountered, the particular object was logged, and those logs were aggregated to analyze further. Basically, if you are from a mainframe world, it is as good as writing a print statement. That is exactly what they did. And when they collected all the logs, especially from the objects which were getting throttled, they figured out It was all because the objects which are coming in from their vendors, from their external parties into the system, had some missing value in the key elements. Basically, impure data or data corrupted, which is not very unusual in an IT world. But what really has happened here is, whenever such data passed through the systems and it has to be returned to the DynamoDB, that hash function mapped all those objects into the same partition. That's the reason that partition was slowing down, because it is now heavily congested, and anything over and above getting mapped to the same partition caused the throttling effect. So even though there were too many empty partitions available, but objects which were getting mapped to this particular partition, when it was cluttered or when it was filled, the DynamoDB was throttling. And when it started throttling, the queues have to be backed up, which was resulting in an overall slowness of the application. So this is what exactly happened. If you boil down to the root cause here and see, it was all about incorrect data, or I will say, to be more accurate, it was insufficient data which was coming in, and this application just allowed it to be returned into their databases. A very common scenario for those who had been into IT applications for a long period of time, but in a serverless world, that has resulted into an overall slowness of the application and also a proportionate increase in the bill, because these people are thinking, we don't have the right throughput, let's keep increasing, and they were paying more. After this analysis, they brought down the number of partitions, because you were billed on with that, and over a period of a quarter they were able to save around 300k. That's why this problem is called as a $1 million problem, all caused because of some missing elements in the data which was coming into their system from their vendors. They fixed it. So the point which we are trying to drive through this scenario is, whether it is our very first scenario of a single incorrect configuration, or this scenario where you had the incorrect data element coming into, or a missing data, the ramifications had been very huge. It was not in proportion with what you would have expected in a server-based model. So you need to apply more caution, and you need to deep dive and investigate by setting up the right alarms, by understanding the nuances around the performance, and also trying to understand the way in which the serverless really operates. The case which we just dealt, the dead queue, was a case which was a very unusual case of a boundary condition, and this scenario was all about missing data. So you shouldn't be learning it in a hard way, but you need to deep dive, make a very informed decision, understand the technical nuances on how this serverless really operates and the related components which are tagged along with it in the architecture, their interaction, their boundary condition, and then go ahead with the choice of migrating to serverless. Hope you like this podcast, and feel free to share any lessons or any practices which you have come across on the serverless world. Again, we were not trying to discredit serverless, but we were just saying, be cautious. And feel free to write your queries to me at querishami@gmail.com. My email ID is available in the description section of this podcast. Any comments, feel free to let us know. Thank you. We will meet again the next week with a new set of topics.